Hello, my friends, and welcome to the Let's Be Real podcast. I am so excited to be here with you today because we are about to start a series of conversations on some folks that I've been interviewing over the last few weeks, and I just can't wait to share them with you. There is something so enjoyable to me about introducing you to great people, especially people that you maybe have not come across yet in your life, and they're going to enrich your world, and you're going to feel like you're just sitting down with the two of us for a conversation, and it's just really, really enjoyable. So I'm excited for today's episode. Tyler Reagan is kicking off our season. Tyler is a leader. He is the former director of the Catalyst Conference, and he has a book that has just come out called Leading Things You Didn't Start. And I am telling you, if you are a leader of any kind who inherited anything, so if you inherited a team, if you inherited a company, if you inherited an organization, if you inherited a volunteer leadership role that was under someone else's purview before you, you are going to love this. Tyler breaks down for us just like some of the main dynamics that come up when we are coming into a new seat as a leader. And we also just have a great conversation about all kinds of other things too, because it was just really, really fun to connect. So you guys are going to enjoy this, and wanted to also remind you, if you're not over in our email friends area, you're going to want to go there. So in our email we release each week, we just share with you tips and tricks and some overviews of the podcast, and we'll just be more connected. It feels like a really easy way to be in the conversation, especially because we have so much coming up this year. So if you haven't done it yet, just go over to NicoleEunice.com. That little pop-up window will come right up. You can put your email in there. I promise I don't hit you up very often. You'll just get a quick little note from me every Friday. So would love to see you guys there. All right. Enjoy this conversation with Tyler Reagan. Hey everyone, welcome to the Let's Be Real podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Eunice, and I believe we need all the help we can get when it comes to living a full and free life. Here you'll find honest truth, practical tips, and perspective changes that help you embrace the miracle that is your life. It's an in-process conversation that's going to be unfiltered, and it better be fun. Let's get real together. Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Be Real. I'm so excited that we have a guest with us today, Tyler. Tyler, thank you for being with us. I have seen you from afar, like very, very far away, a Catalyst. For those of you guys who are not familiar with Catalyst, it's a leadership conference that has been truly transformative and life-changing for so many folks. And Tyler is the former president. Is that is that your title?
Yeah,
former president of Catalyst. So I've seen Tyler from the nosebleed seats, like, hey, buddy, one day maybe we'll chat. And now here we are.
And now we're chatting.
Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Thanks for having
me. Welcome to the show. Yeah, we're so glad to have you. And I was so excited to reach out to you when I saw your latest book. I knew it would be a great conversation for us to have here on Let's Be Real. We've got folks from all across the spectrum. But man, when there's a book title that you immediately say, like, wow, we really need to have that book.
Yeah.
Like, that's the book that you just wrote. So
yeah.
Leading Things You Didn't Start, right? Did I get it?
That's okay. It. Well done.
So that's what I mean. I'm like, a lot of times I can't even remember my own book titles. And I'll be talking to people and they'll be like, what was that book? And I'm like, it's hard for me to remember. It's okay. But this is a perfect title because it describes exactly something that is such a need, whether it is a volunteer position that you're taking on or a new position in a company when you like inherit a team, or of course your experience inheriting Catalyst. Understanding how to engage with this kind of leadership is definitely the conversation we can have. So let's take it back before we get into that. And I want to ask you what your first brush with leadership was in your life.
Oh, man. First, thanks for having me. It's fun to be a part. And, you know, I don't ever take these things for granted. It doesn't matter. I remember even when I was at Catalyst, I used to tell my assistant, because I'd have young leaders reach out and say, hey, can I get lunch with you or whatever?
Yeah.
And I would always tell them, like, any young leader that wants to sit and have a lunch or coffee, yes, the answer is yes. Because when do we ever get to the point that that's not an okay answer, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
We're busy and stuff like that. But if you've got somebody who wants to learn and have conversations and questions about how to be better at what they do, like, mm-hmm. yeah, the answer is yes. But And I remember seeing you that one Catalyst event. Just kidding.
I know you did. I know. We had a moment. I felt it. I was like, I feel like we've really connected.
Like, oh, there's Nicole. She's really worshiping right now. She's super engaged.
That's right. I know I lifted the whole experience.
It's really
for you.
Good.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. So for me, leadership has always been, I think it's something I'm fairly naturally tilted towards, if you will. I think I've always had a little bit of an ability to rally people. My mm-hmm. strength finder number one is woo. And I think I've had that since I was young. In high
legit
school.
Legit woo is the best strength finder.
It's like, pretty strong. It's just got a great name.
It's just a great name. It just describes itself, and it's an acronym. I remember when one of my young leaders discovered that they had never heard of the idea that woo is a strength, which was so evident in this guy. So I'm a little jealous, and I'm glad to hear it.
And for those of you listening, woo is actually winning others over. So that'll help you at least understand what that is. But I think I've always been able to do that. And then when I was in high school, I became a Christian. And I remember pretty early on a lot of the adult volunteers when I became a believer. I just kind of became a leader in the youth group, but they were just convinced I should be a youth pastor when I graduated. And I was like, okay. If God calls
where
me,
where did
sure.
you think you were headed? Where did you think you were headed before?
Teaching and coaching. I love sports. Mm-hmm. I love people. I had I got an education degree from the University of Georgia, and about halfway through my sophomore year is when I had a night at our campus ministry, and I just felt like it was time to kind of lay this and just be done. I was like, am I going to do teaching? Am I going to do ministry? And I just went to the altar one night for some ministry time. And I just, it was as clear as day. The Lord was speaking to me about ministry. And I think I knew that, but I just, I didn't want to get ahead of him, and which as if you could do that. Right. Mm. And so anyway, I finished my degree and then went off, was youth pastor in an Episcopal church for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Who even knows what that means? But one of the cool things was in my whole story, there's one narrative that continues to rise. Just happen is God just puts me around tables with leaders that are unbelievable. And I can't even sometimes believe that. I mean, I worked with Andy Stanley in some capacity for 20 years, right? And sitting at the table hearing Andy process leadership without being on a stage is phenomenal. Craig Rochelle.
Let me stop you for a second and ask you a question about that. Cause we just last month we did a series on life mapping and understanding your story. When is it that you began to understand that it was not like what was happening was unusual? Because you name it as an important part of your story.
Well, and even to go back, when I started working for Andy at, we started at Athens Church, then I was at Brownsbridge. And that's when I had a leadership coach for the first time, Fran LaMattina, who's just been a legend, female coach in the industry. She's been doing it for 30 years. And she's just one of my best friends and probably one of the people that's most impacted my life. Mm-hmm. I think it's when my radar started getting up for or paying attention to certain things. And for instance, when I went to Gordon Conwell as well. And when I went there, I got discipled by Robert Coleman. Well, it was one class, but it wasn't one class. It was this guy who wrote the Master Plan of Evangelism, who refers to Billy Graham as Billy because, you know, he had that kind of relationship with him. He was in a different era. And he took me to two Billy Graham Association board meetings, and I just flew with him and spent time with him. And so little things like that, I just look back and I started seeing this thread of, wow. And then even when I was a youth pastor at Episcopal Church, who would have thought that the guy that was in small town Georgia, the priest at that thing, left the Episcopal Church, joined in with the Anglican movement, and is now the Archbishop of the North American Anglican Church. Well, there's no way that was predicted when I was, 22 years old. But now not only does he have amazing hats, but he's a leader that leads a national movement, And so I don't know. I think it's almost a little bit retrospect where I look back and I go, wow, that was amazing. But once I realized what God had done, and I remember this is a really unique thing, but I remember when I worked at North Point, there was a day we were doing a serving, like the whole staff was going to go serve. But they asked me to take a staff photo and I go in and I'm not scared to lead. And so I just got everybody lined up, did all this stuff, took the picture. And one guy who's an older guy who'd been there a long time and very respected came up to me later. He said, you really aren't afraid to lead leaders, are you? And I was like, no. And so then reason Catalyst even worked for me was I've just never really been starstruck. Like I have a healthy respect for leaders, but I also have a healthy understanding of who they are. Mm-hmm. And so when you're handed the keys to lead a Craig Rochelle and Andy Stanley schedule, and Lisa, like some of these world-class leaders that people look up to, and they say, we trust you with our time, we trust you with our name. That's a pretty cool thing. And so, but I don't think you get that if you're freaking out, if you're, you know, you get real anxious around them, you don't know how to lead, you always defer to them. And God just gave me the ability naturally to try to lead leaders. And so, yeah. So it's just how been kind navigate, of a lot of it.
Yeah. That's amazing. I mean, and I think that like, I'm thinking of young leaders listening right now. And I'm curious about what your relationship has been with insecurity, like the sense of what's my path when you're around such giants, like sort of understanding your place in that role. Yeah. What has shaped that for you?
Well, I talk a lot about that in my first book, Life-Giving mm-hmm. Leader. And a lot of that starts with a pretty defining leadership moment for me about, 15, 16, 17 years ago, I forget. And, I had a leader.
We're old,
that,
Tyler. We're
I know,
just old.
I know, but me and this specific leader, just, we weren't a great fit. Like, you know how they always say you hire for character, competency, and chemistry. Mm-hmm. Our character was fine. Our competency was fine, but we just didn't fit chemistry wise. My senior year at Georgia, I had a best friend. He moved in with me. We weren't best friends in that situation. Mm. And then he moved out. We're best friends again. So certain environments create a lack of chemistry. And this guy specifically, I remember when I left, I said, yeah, if you ask me to go fishing, I'm in. But if you ask me to work with you, I'm out. Like, it's just, it was just a very different dynamic. But one of the things he said to me when I was leaving was, he said, if you're not successful in your next, at the next place you're going, don't blame the organization. It's probably just your personality. And it was very encouraging. I thought,
wow,
very
uplifting. What a send off.
Let's go.
What a send off.
And But what in his mind, my wiring was going to keep me from being a great leader. I was, I'm very unstructured naturally. I don't think details. I don't cross T's and dot I's. But the opposite of that on the right path assessment, the attributes that make up unstructured are generalist, improviser, and instinct. Mm. Well, those are the very things that made me fantastic for leading live events. Mm. Like my instinct and my improv is what makes me able to think on my feet. I don't get stressed out when things go wrong. I mean, people would see me at events, big events with 10,000 people there. And they're like, you seem so calm. I'm like, cause I'm right in the middle of what I'm best at. Like, and so that's when I think it, and honestly, that's where a lot of the book came from, is that moment I thought of three things. One is that guy had just shirked responsibility for our relationship, which is fine. Number two is I thought of two of the six people at the place I was going, and they were wired similar to me and had been successful. But the third was Psalm 139, that I was knit together in my mother's womb. And if what this dude is saying is true and what Psalm 139 says is true, then somehow God made a mistake with the wiring and the gifting he gave me, because I was going to flounder and not flourish. And I just didn't believe that to be true. And so for the rest of my career since then, 15, 16, 17 years, I have felt called to call out that uniqueness in the people I lead. Mm. That doesn't remove insecurity though, right? Like there are days that I'm insecure. There are triggers that bring me up, bring up emotion and insecurity in me. But I constantly keep going back to the idea that if the very best I can stay aligned with my wiring, trust that God connected that to my calling, that allows me to try to fight against some of this insecurity. So yeah, when you're in a room with some big hitters, trusting that you're supposed to be in that room with those big hitters versus making fun of it and dishonoring God's call in your life a little bit. I love how I think almost every New Testament letter, Paul said, I, Paul, an apostle appointed by God. Mm-hmm. That is not arrogance. That is a confidence and calling that is super important.
I'm really glad you pounded the table for that part.
Sorry, I needed it.
That was a really good part. No, I loved it. And I love what you did right there, because you were able to step outside of your experience and then create, like we've talked about this before on the podcast, like create a forced choice where you're like, either I can believe what this guy said, or I can believe what Psalm 139 says, and how powerful it is when we align a forced choice and then like start to live into that second option.
Yep.
And then to see how that's like what has created a trajectory for you over the 15 years in that. Well, that's awesome.
And Nicole, one of the best things I've ever done, I learned from one of my spiritual mentors, was so often we can diagnose the lie, but we never replace it with truth. And so he made me one time on a flight, I just wrote down all the lies I was believing about myself. And then I crossed them off. And each one of those, I had to go in and go, what's the truth? Like, what's the truth? Because I think so often we could diagnose the lies, but when we replace it with truth, we just got to anchor that stuff deep in our souls for those days that we don't feel it. And that, you know, because our feelings tend to be what indicates for us, or dictates really our direction. But Lisa Turkhurst always says feelings are indicators, not dictators. I think that's a great thought.
Yeah. Awesome. That's so good. Well, let's talk a little bit about kind of this season that you had, the season that you were in that brought about this book. Why are you passionate about this topic of leading things that you don't start?
Man, I remember driving in the day, you know, it was like a Monday after the week before. I was just the creative director and the, you know, kind of leading the staff at Catalyst. And now 3 days later, I'm coming in to lead it. And I remember thinking, there's not a lot out there on this conversation, especially in the faith world. There is a million resources on entrepreneurship and startup, right? Like, but I made this number up, but I would bet north of 90% of us don't ever start anything. Like, we are all going to step into an existing team. We're going to step into an existing mission. We're going to step into a position that either was loved or hated by the person that preceded us. And I just was convinced that there's not a lot out there on that. There's a lot out there, again, on how do you start something and how do you take your ideas to another level. But what do you, it's just a different leadership skill set. If I had stepped into Catalyst, which was 14 years old, started by John Maxwell and Andy Stanley, for crying out loud, been led really well by Brad Lominick. And I just thought, oh, it's like starting something new. It's not. That's a very different leadership skill set when you come in. You, how long do you honor the past without being stuck in the mud because of the past? Like, just elements like that, I just realized we're very different. And so I just thought, well, I'm just going to try to put my my ideas around this, what I've learned, what I've seen. One of my favorite parts of the new book is I've got four chapters at the end that are case studies of leaders in different spheres who have done this or do this on a regular basis, like Buzz Williams, who's the head basketball coach at Texas A&M. Well, this was his fourth major D1 basketball program.
Wow.
You talk about how, and he was 100 days in when I interviewed him. You talk about the reality of how do you get people on board that you didn't recruit or sign up? How many, you know, that signed up for a very different leader or a very different coach or whatever. That's just a different leadership skill set. And so we just talk a lot about that in the book and trying to get some very practical ways to step into those spaces.
Yeah. And those case studies are amazing, not only because you get behind the scenes really on really deconstructing how you do what this is, this big thing to do, but also because it normalizes the experience of all the things that you talk about in the book. Tell me about the things that you started to notice in your own leadership and then you found to be true across the board when it came to really inheriting something that you didn't start.
Sure. The whole first chapter is on the fruit of the Spirit. And I do that because, first of all, those are not natural things most of the time. Some of us are more joyful than others, and some of us might be more gentle than others. But at the end of the day, like, to have love for somebody that leads you or to love those you lead, that's a unique thing. Like, it takes a special thing. But there's one specific fruit that I end up talking about for three chapters, which is patience. That's really, out of all the fruit, I think that's probably the most difficult for any of us. And so therefore, you know, it's a fruit of the Spirit. It's not like, oh, I'm just going to whip up some patience. Now, it really does require some sort of connection and some sort of ability or an overflow of our lives. Right. But I always thought, like, you know, if I had a new employee come in and they exhibited 4, 5, 6 of these fruit of the Spirit in their first 90 days, they're probably going to be at a good place. Like, they're probably going to start well. And so I just wanted to lay that foundation that says how you come in is so critical to the influence either gaining or influence lost in those first three, four, 6 months, you know? Mm. And fruit of the spirit for me is one of those things. So I kind of tried to pick up, and I asked each of those case studies, I was like, talk about patience, talk to me about how long do you wait? What do you have to be patient with, you know? And I think it's just that understanding we can't come in with guns blazing. Now, occasionally there's a ship that's going down and you get assigned to fix the ship. Well, in that situation, you're probably going to have to grab the reins really quickly and make some adjustments. But if you don't do that with a massive amount of care, you're not going to gain influence. You're going to lose influence. Now, we see this all the time, Nicole, where somebody goes, yeah, well, they all had to leave. They weren't the right people.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes that's true, but most of the times, I would say more often than not, it's because you came in and you hosed them all because you made some big shift or some big adjustment super fast before they were ready and you lost them. And, you know, it's easier to go, yeah, well, they weren't the right people. Were they not? We don't know. Like, it requires some real skill to come in and get people on board with what you're doing. And to be able to turn ships that has to happen. That's a part of the job. Right. So, I feel like I learned a lot of I learned good and bad as I tried to step into a national platform. But hopefully some more good than bad, who knows?
Talk to me about you mentioned that one of your natural strengths is intuition.
Yeah.
Have you had an intuition that you still, like, let's say you have a person, you know, you've inherited a team and you're like, I don't think this is going to work out. You have an intuition on that. What's been your learnings about how you know when it's time to act when we talk about it? This is one of the main tensions that I think leaders experience.
Yeah. And I think in these moments, I would call it discernment, right? When am I discerning the right thing? Honestly, it depends on the subject. So like we talk a lot about in the evaluation part of this process is honor and honoring the past, honoring history, honoring what came before you, honoring the people, good, bad, or indifferent, because what you celebrate is going to be an indication of what you're going to implement and what you believe in and your value systems. So even though you're honoring, and I actually had a couple team members one time, I would always go above and beyond when somebody would leave to try to honor them and celebrate them. And I had a couple executive team members look at me one day and go, hey, but what you're saying about those people is making you look like you don't know what just went down. Like, you know, when they weren't a great fit or they needed to leave, but I would honor them. And like, so there's a discernment of understanding how I celebrate and honor is going to be an indicator of what the culture should be about. Mm. But one of the key things about honoring to me is I'm going to honor for honor's sake. I'm going to honor to be able to show that I recognize where we've come from. But I remember even when I stepped in at Catalyst before Brad left, he would ask me, he'd say, hey, help us. Like, your job is to come help move us forward. And I remember telling the team, hey, when I'm talking about where we're going, let's just assume that I'm not referring to where we've been. I'm referring to where I feel like we're supposed to go. Mm. Well, even just saying that, Nicole, helps people recognize that I recognize what I'm saying. Do you know what I mean? That I'm not dogging Brad or I'm not dogging the things that went before us. I believe there's just a new direction we need to go. And
it also, it feels like it gives you permission to be patient too.
It has
because if you're giving a vision to say we are headed somewhere, but if you're choosing to go slow, you're also like re-clarifying this. We're not going to stay here, but I don't have to like prove myself. And I think that's one thing I see leaders do a lot is that they have and I fall prey to this too. It's like, well, deep down, it's actually my insecurity. I need to be confident. I need to be competent. So you need to see me doing
that's
stuff.
Right.
And by doing so, they actually like hurt their influence deeply. Yep.
I was reading the book for audio a few weeks ago. And sometimes it's like, when a band finally releases that album they did 3 years ago and they're like, I don't even remember how to play this. So what are the chords for this song again?
Yes.
But I read this one line in the patience section and it just struck me again as something. And I went, did I write that? But either way, I don't know. Somebody wrote it, I guess. And maybe it was me. But the line was, I was talking about a really tough season and what I wanted was relief, but what I needed was revelation. Mm. And I think so often we get ahead because there's silence or there's but everybody needs to see I'm working or, because, and oh, by the way, we want relief from this current reality. We want this thing to go away, the pain, the hardship, the struggle to go away. We just want relief. But what if there's a revelation required for us to move on to that next piece? That requires patience. Mm. So often we miss the thing that we need to hear or the thing we need to see because we jumped ahead and we tried to short circuit the system. Mm. And you and I both know the destination is not the final thing. The process is what defines us. It is the best part of the thing. And so I just think being patient after you really do a great job of evaluating what's great, what works, what's the DNA, and then moving forward from there.
Tell me a little bit about your personal rhythms in when you want relief, but you know you need revelation. What's that process like for you?
One of my words for this year is just prayer. It's just, I know that sounds crazy simple, but I feel like when I force myself to be a man of prayer, it slows me down a little bit. It gives me the ability just to rest a hair. And I've always said that I'm a pretty relaxed person. My wife would disagree with that after 20 years of marriage because I do get worked up. Like I'm unstructured and I don't like my days to look the same, but I do like to be on time. And I do, you know, like I like progress and I like momentum. And so when I feel like there's this like lull in that, I try to move things forward. But for me, just to pause every day, hopefully multiple times a day and just kind of just meditate, pray, whatever the thing is, and find myself in a place to just kind of, like you said earlier, pull out a hair and see this thing from a little different perspective. And oftentimes that's what I need. That's what I need to do. The other piece I would say is I just always try to think about the other people. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like my best leadership is when they're all growing and excelling. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's easy for me to recognize that if I go slow, this is better for them. Mm. You know what I mean? And so when I put people in and put eyeballs in that conversation in my head, it allows me to really recognize what's best for them, not just what's best for me.
Oh man, I love that. Put eyeballs in your head. Like when you're thinking, bring it down and like imagine the people, which still doesn't mean you're going to have the exact right answer, which is one of those like exposing things about leadership is that at some point you do have to just...
You got to make a call.
Go. Yeah.
But you know, I would say to that too though, Nicole, like I've led a lot of young leaders over the years. They are getting more and more disabled by this understanding. It's the HGTV forever home syndrome. Like I even watch those shows and they're like, oh, this is our forever home. I'm like, is it really? Because like, that's not even real life. Like,
could you even really predict
you
that?
You meet like somebody that lived in a house for 50 years and you go, you're weird. Like it's just one of those things when it comes to, but a lot of young leaders are getting so crippled by the idea that this decision is my forever decision. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. It's okay. You're going to go somewhere you don't like sometime and you're going to do some things that you don't think are perfectly aligned with your calling in life. Like you have to email. It's part of life. Like you got to do it. I know it, you know, so I just say that because we're going to make some wrong decisions and we're going to get ahead. Sometimes we shouldn't. We're going to be too slow sometimes. The goal is how do we do this to the best of our ability and lead well? And I think for me, it's just about, do I bring life to people in the process, whether I jump ahead or I'm too slow?
Let's get real practical. Tell us about a time that you felt good about a decision and it was actually either poorly received. You said in your book, like what people perceive is what they receive. So a time where something was just like poorly received and you had to deal with that, or you actually decide, like you realized it was not a good decision. What was your next move after that?
Really receive. That's a really tough question. I don't know that I have specifics in mind. Here's one thing that comes to mind is early on, I remember having a couple people when I stepped into a place like that. And I'm a big proponent about body language. And so I had a couple though, whose body language, every time I was talking about a decision or direction or vision, and I found myself, this is a good indicator of whether or not somebody's going to be able to be coached or recruited or stay on the team, is I found myself when I would make eye contact in the room, I would jump over them and keep going because I knew that I needed to stay engaged with the vision. I needed to be passionate. I didn't want insecurity to enter into my leadership. And I knew that if I made eye contact with one or two people, it would derail all of that because their body language was like always, what do you have for me? Oh, really? That's for the best, you know, like, and you're like, okay. And those, some of those are people that, I was forced to go, hey, this here's, you know, I remember specific conversations with a couple people of here's one, I'm never going to be Brad Lominick.
Yeah.
That's just not who I am. And I'm okay with that. And you've got to be okay with that. And number two, this is the expectations to be a part of this team moving forward. If you, if you can't deal with one or both of those scenarios, then maybe God's got a new season for you and we have to be okay with that. But some of that goes back to what you're asking, which is that those moments or those decisions where you're like, that was not great. And we have them all the time, right? You know, one decision for me, now to think about it, was I just kind of went on a gut feeling. We used to do Catalyst Dallas and it would sell out and it was great, but we felt like it could be better. I felt like it could be better. And we made the call to move it to a different church. We thought there were better options there and it turned out to not be at all. And if I had to do that over again, and part of the struggle was West Coast Catalyst was always super energetic. And then we'd come to Dallas 2 weeks later. And even though it was sold out, it felt like people were like, wah, wah, you know, so it was a feeling. It truly was.
I was not in that crowd. That was the problem, Tyler. I wasn't there.
I will never forget. We had Lecrae pretty early on do a performance at Dallas. And you would have thought the guy has zero talent based on the response in the room.
But for every pastor listening right now, they feel just a little bit better because I always say about communicating, the hardest room to communicate to is like when you're preaching, like when you have like a wide span and like people are texting, people are sleeping, people, you know, half the people, some of the people don't want to be there. But for Lecrae to feel that, it makes me feel just a little bit better.
It broke me down. Like I was like, oh, I'm never coming back to this city. But part of the difference is you go to West Coast, they're in from the moment. Like they were fired up. They've been waiting on it. The city of Dallas in Texas, like they have a million different conferences. So we always just felt like we were one of many and people kind of sat with their arms like this, like, what do you have for us? Well, that's not real fun. So anyway, but I made a decision off of feeling, not really wisdom. And that one ended up just kind of going away. And that, I look back and I go, I wish I did that differently.
How did you handle that with your team? Like, what was your approach to realizing that wasn't actually a good call? And I made the ultimate call. So
I think I realize it more now than I did right around that time. We tried a bunch of other things and we had a lot of things transpire after that, but, I'm uber collaborative. And so I can remember on one hand, a few decisions that I just had to ultimately make.
Yeah.
We made that as a team and I led them, you know, and that's, I talk about in the new book, No Rhetorical Meetings, like, quite often as leaders, we say we're collaborative, but really we're considering a collaborative when I've gone in and told them what I want to do. And they all say, okay,
yeah,
that's not necessarily collaboration. Right. But it's just kind of learning, hey, as a team, we made this call and we'll live with it as a team. And, but now when I look back, I even towards my end of my time at Catalyst, I look back and I was like, ah, we could have been in a better place if financially in different ways, if we had probably trusted the wisdom of what we saw versus the gut feelings, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good to hear that. Cause I was just thinking, Tyler, about what you said about young leaders feeling like every position's their forever home. And I think it's good when we talk about mistakes we've made just to say like, hey, I've made mistakes. I do things differently. It doesn't mean that God's not still calling me to leadership. Totally. Like I'm just going to keep, you know, I'm going to keep on going.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
I think that is a cool thing that you've done. I want to ask you a question that you ask in your book to others. Yep. You said, what's the one leadership you would, what's the lesson you would tell yourself back when you were in your early 20s? Yep. Something that you wish you would have known at that time.
Yeah. I always go back to emotional intelligence. I didn't really learn emotional intelligence till like mid 30s, and any leader, I don't care age, if they were to say, where do I start? That's where I send them, because to me, it is the most critical foundational understanding of how to lead yourself so that you can lead others better. And what it is, you know, in the 90s when Goldman releases this research, it's the first time there was actual data to prove that the best leaders in the world lead people best.
Yeah.
And it used to be called soft skills. So a lot of people still call it that. But like what his data showed is you can call it whatever you want. But people that recognize emotion, that have empathy, people that are socially aware, they're just better leaders all the way around. And so, but we do live in a day and age, and you and I and the businesses that we're in, we spend a lot of time on part one, which is self-awareness, like Enneagram and Myers-Briggs and Berkman, you name it. And a lot of people know their self-awareness, but where the real skill comes in is self-management. It is not just being aware of how I act. I've got to have behavior change. If I, if I'm aware that I'm overconfident, dominating, well, it's not okay to catch that every time after you've said something that's ridiculous and you're a jerk and now you apologize. Apologies don't fix that. Yeah. And so it's how do we get leaders to transform from, I just know myself, now I can lead myself. And then you obviously have social awareness and relational management, but that's where I would start. I think to me, you become aware of your own wiring early on and become proud of it. The quicker you'll be lined up to be a great leader.
Yeah. And I love what you talk about in the book too, which is often something I'm teaching as well, which is how do we move to a place where we're curious about our reactions and sort of stepping outside, almost like separating. You said, you mentioned separating the work from the person.
Yeah.
And tell me a little bit about how you've seen that play out in ministry and leadership.
Yeah. It's, every time I have a position to replace, it's really easy to think, well, how do I find John again? But that's a bad leadership decision. You're not setting up person B for success if your positional hiring is to replace that person. I just like to be able to celebrate that person. It was a great season. We love them. But here's what, every time you have somebody leave, gives you a chance to reset that job description, that position, that opportunity. You might not even replace it, but because you need something over here. But if you are going to need that role, you have to go into it going, okay, what could make this role better? What could do this for? And that helps me to, what's the word I'm looking, separate from disconnect was the original word I was looking for, because D and S are two different starts to a word. Because I started with a D, I'm like, separate. No, that's not right. But disconnect, that original leader, and the job, because that's hard for people to do. But as a leader, I have to go, hey, we're not replacing them. We're hiring a new person for a job that's similar. Well, I need to be articulate what the job is, not what the person did before. Now, there might be some things they were awesome at that I want to make sure I'm kind of looking for in this next person.
Sure. Like,
they're great team leaders. They're great, this, whatever. But I'm not trying to replace John with another John.
Yeah.
I need to figure out a way. And so part of that is when you step in to a place you didn't start, is recognizing those little pieces and going, what's DNA stuff and what's person stuff? What are the things that that leader brought that's great, but it's not necessarily best for the future? And so, I don't know, there's just a really important, and the same thing with ideas. When you're evaluating, and that's part of where I talk about it, when you evaluate, and I've been in the creative space for 20 years, the best creatives are the ones that can recognize that when we evaluate the idea, we are not evaluating them. We are evaluating the idea.
Yeah.
And being able to disconnect that is really critical, especially when you're stepping into a new space like this.
What do you, how do you do this? Because I guess like I see all that. And for some reason, it's so much easier to see it in others and to like lead it into it. But I actually feel like, especially in ministry, the mix of my work and my identity is so tightly wound. How have you worked through that in your own life and then as you're coaching others?
Yeah, I think, Nicole, what you stumble upon in this, and you do this for work, is I think there's a lot of people that aren't willing to be leadership, quote unquote, experts or consultants because they know they can't live up to what they teach. Right? Like I write a leadership book and I'm like, I'm trying.
Yeah.
But just because in leadership, you're shooting for ideals that probably aren't going to happen 100% of the time. It takes a secure enough leader to say, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm going to fight really hard for what's best, knowing that I'm not always going to hit that mark. So I say that as a preface to the fact that I do okay at this, but there are times like, I remember the first book when I handed the first chapter over to my wife and my assistant and one other person at the team. It was weird feeling. Like I'm like, it's like a painting like revealed for the first time. Do you like it? What do you think? Like, well, I can't lead like that. Mm-hmm. And because day in and day out, if I lead in this constant, like, what do you think? Are you okay mm-hmm. with this? Whatever. And I'm not going to get anything done, nor am I going to gain any traction. I would rather build and develop great relationships so that when I make a mistake, there's grace because mm-hmm. I've done so many things to pour into those people. Yeah. And that's why life-giving leadership matters so much to me is like, when I make a withdrawal, but I've done nothing but deposit, it's just not going to be, it's not going to crush the relationship. Mm. And so even when it comes to their days that I can't handle the critique and the evaluation, and that's why I started my own business, because then nobody can tell me other than no, I'm just kidding.
You're like, and everybody, yeah, please read my books.
Anybody else have a problem with this? Nope. Just looking around the office by myself here at my Boston Terrier sitting right here behind me. He might
and
have
he feels great about it.
He's dead asleep, so he seems to think it's fantastic. But you know what I mean? It's just,
yeah,
I do try to disconnect myself from the idea, but that's just not always possible. But yeah, it's a practice worth pursuing.
Yeah. And you mentioned like grieving when you leave a role and, yep, you know, yeah, it is so easy to fall prey to this is my forever position. This is my forever. This is my pinnacle. Yep. And then life changes and seasons, yep, come and you've just been through a big transition. What are some of the ways that you've been able to grow in this area?
Yeah. I think so many leaders just move on and never grieve the loss of that mm-hmm. identity. Mm-hmm. And it comes up to bite them at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And even when you're going to something better, like I remember when I left from Brownsbridge to go to Catalyst, for 8 years, I was known as the service programming director at Brownsbridge.
Yeah.
3 weeks later, I'm not that guy anymore. And even though the new thing is better or something I really was excited about, when I would go to a restaurant in our community, my identity had changed. Mm-hmm. And I just had to grieve that a little bit and go, you know what? I'm not that guy anymore. That's kind of sad. That's kind of weird. Like, I'm a firm believer of handling things early so they don't come back and get me later. And now, even with like conflict, I've always said I would rather lose sleep on the front end of a hard conversation because I've prepared, mm-hmm. I've done the hard work, than lose sleep because I handled it poorly.
Yeah.
Like, that just feels like a better trade-off to me. Mm. And so the same thing with these kind of things, like, we have to be okay that there are hard things. There are hard things that we have to deal with. And there's times we need to set aside and not just bury it deep and go, guys, this really stinks. Like, I'm really hurt right now. This really hurt me. Or I really need to grieve the loss of that thing or that person leaving. I mean, that stinks too, right? You invest in somebody and then they leave. Gosh, that's painful. Mm-hmm. I need to take a minute and realize that. And deal with the fact that that hurt me a little bit. And then I got to move on. But you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of calling a spade a spade. Like, don't be afraid to be honest about it.
Yep, absolutely. And I mean, this connects back to where we started our conversation, where you talked about that moment on an airplane where you're crossing out lies. Right. A lot of times this conflict and grief and that kind of pain can be connected to those lies if we haven't disconnected it. And so it becomes, to me, it's like this ultimate journey into the fullest, freest self, because God can use these leadership experiences. Like, you know, I always say, like, God's not going to sacrifice you on the altar of ministry. He's not like, hey, let's sacrifice all of who you are for other people. Like, he's going to use these experiences. You're a leader for a reason. And maybe this is the only way that God has designed for you to grow is these hard experiences. So, all right, I'm going to ask, I always ask all of my guests for a little coaching, because I'm like, that's the spirit of this conversation is when we're together. I'm going to be like, all right, well, you coach me. So I noticed in your book that you talk about celebration.
Yep.
And celebration, I'm an Enneagram 3. I don't, I have a guess on what kind of Enneagram you are, but I'm not supposed to do that. My guess is a 7, but
that's what most people guess. And honestly, even Bob Goff one time said, if you're not a 7, the test is wrong. I am a 2.
Okay.
I'm just a helper by nature and I have fun doing it. Don't get me wrong. And I score really high on the 7, but the 2 is the one that just continues to resonate with my most natural self, you know?
Well, and I have a friend who's a 2 who does remind me of you. And I always say about the Enneagram, you and only you can determine the driver behind who you are.
Sure.
So you may sound like, people always think I'm an 8. I'm like, I'm not, I'm a 3 and I have a lot of outward energy, but I know that the thing that will plague me is shame. I know that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whether it's shame or fear or anger, like that is for you to know through your own journey, yep. right? People can't tell.
And that's the self-awareness, the EQ. It's just that mm-hmm. constant learning. And I think one of the things I would say, Nicole, about self-awareness, it's not just, I even wrote about this in the first book, there's self-awareness of our history, mm-hmm. not just our wiring. Like, yeah. you know, I grew up my freshman year at the University of Georgia. We went through a bankruptcy as a family and they came mm-hmm. and took my car from the parking lot of the dorm.
Wow.
Well, I have to be aware of that moment in my life, even though I've dealt with it and even though I'm better because of it, whatever you want to say about it, when financial insecurity arises, if I'm not aware of those historical markers in my life that trigger those things,
yeah,
like, so that's where that awareness and like you're saying, you leading yourself is super critical, even no matter what your number is.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Okay. So you're a two, which makes sense to me now. I'm a three, so I'm a hard driver. And one of the things about three is like, they're naturally like, if I'm going to say, I want to talk about work. Like, I love this conversation. Yeah. So I'm like, let's talk about work.
Right.
So celebration does not come naturally to me.
Sure.
What's a life hack you would give me as a leader to like just improve? Cause then I feel insecure about it, which is really funny. Cause I'll be around twos or sevens and I'm like, I'm never going to be good at this. Like, so I need to find like a medium, like knowing celebration is important. What, like, how would you coach me on handling my team in that way?
So two things come to mind. One is Christians are notoriously bad at not receiving well. Mm. And we've created this unspoken, false humility thing that is no, nothing for me, don't focus on it, whatever. And so my thought would be there's a layer that's a wiring and there's a layer that's almost a theology that's been unspoken. Mm. Right. Mm. And I would tell you that like, just learn to say thank you
mm-hmm.
and move on.
That's it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to remember everybody's birthday and everyone's kid's name.
So many Christians derail something else that's going into somebody else's life. Like if somebody gives you a gift or a compliment or a celebration, there's something that's happened in their life. They're doing their own work. They're working out their own thing. Uh-huh. And we derail that when we don't receive it well.
Yeah.
So I would say for you, figuring out this isn't just about you. This is about them too.
Yeah.
Like they're doing something that's stepping out of faith. They're doing something that stirred in them. They're doing something because they care about you and they see you as valuable. When we do a false humility, we don't receive something well. It's not about you anymore. Now we've mm-hmm. affected that person that's trying to do something kind for us or celebrate us well. I'm terrible at it. Same way. I was like, oh, no attention to me, no attention to me. Well, I can still feel that. But if I just look and go, hey, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. Mm. Now I can deal with that my own crap later. But
like, why was that hard? Yeah.
Yeah. But now this person at least has done what God's called them to do or what they felt compelled to do. That's a win for them. And you and I are both in the business of getting wins for them.
Right.
What's beautiful is now you've heard some things that matter to you and should. And how do we say thank you, receive them, and get them deeper into our spirits, you know?
And how do you do that for others as well? Like, what are your practices when it comes to like, not only, I do think that modeling, like receiving affirmation is super important, but for your team, what are your practices to do that? Because I can just be lost in the goals, lost in like, listen, do the work.
Yeah.
There'll always be time for fun later, but then like later never comes kind of thing, you know?
Well, and I've always been a subscriber. There's a lot of people that believe that a thank you note for their team is their paycheck. And I don't believe that. I believe that they still choose to be a part of this team. They could go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yes, they get a paycheck. Yes, they work for me. But that's not stewardship. That's not leadership. Mm. That is, well, yeah, you do your job because you get paid to be here. Awesome. Thanks. That's really motivating.
Yeah.
The other thing for me that I think about is and it goes back to that moment where I felt like God said, part of my job and the calling he has in me is to call out the uniqueness in the people I lead. So part of that sometimes is when a celebration is happening and I can tell somebody's deflecting, I'll just straight up call it out and I'll say, Hey, stop. This is about you for a minute. We want to go deep into your spirit and we want you to recognize we believe in you. We see you. We have value in you and you need to hear these words. You don't need to just go, oh, no. So I think sometimes just saying out loud, because not only is there a conviction that comes with that, but you actually might resonate with what's being said and celebrate. Mm. So I've always just been But again, Nicole, it goes back to, I can't do that once in a while.
Right.
Like they're not going to listen if that's the first time I've tried to be kind. They're not going to listen if that's the first time I've tried to deeply go into who they are as people and leaders. I've been doing this for months and months and months and months and years, so that those moments they trust me to say things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I always say, like trust is earned and it's tenuous. And that's not in any way to scare a leader. It's just to say, like, trust is like a dynamic bridge between us that is often moving. Sure. And the more that we can build a foundation to make it firm, if you don't build it, it will erode just because of human nature. This is the same in marriages. It's the same in leadership. So yeah, that is a great reminder. And for me, it's always like, I try to remember, I've actually had to add it to my weekly workflow, is like, today's the day to affirm my team. And, and that sounds, I want to say that out loud, because I'm like, I don't know if leaders know that. Yeah, it doesn't come naturally for some people. It's not because I don't mean it. It's not because I don't love it.
Well,
it's just,
Nicole would be the same for
it.
Me is going, I've got to do bills today and I've got to get an Excel and work on the budget. I don't want to do that. That's the last thing. Like, it's just not who I, like, that's not where I go to naturally. Right. I go to what we're talking about naturally. It's not hard for me.
Yeah.
What's hard for me is making sure the business is lining up with if I don't have the business right, I can't do the things that I need to do relationally. So it's a for sure give and take. It's just part of leadership.
Well, and you're talking about really that self-management, because you're pulling together. And even as we talk about it, I'm like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. When you're a leader, people affirm you for being good at things, and some things come to you naturally. You really don't want to do things you don't like, and you really don't want to do things you don't like that seem to take longer or are harder for you than other people.
So let's practice this right now, Nicole. You ready? You're really good at interviewing.
Thank you.
You are. Like, you're natural. I enjoy it. It feels like it's conversational versus you just, if I go a different direction and the question was over here, that doesn't throw you off. So you're a really good interviewer. So great job.
Thank you. Thank you. I take that in. And Tyler, I wish I could tell you that you're good at spreadsheets, but I really have no idea.
I'm not.
So
I'm okay, because I know you're lying, if that's true.
And I was going to say, and I want to maintain my integrity. So what I'm going to say is, this has been very enjoyable, and I love the book. I will say that, as a fellow writer, like, I love the book and I love the practical parts of it. I love the spiritual aspect of kind of the vision at the beginning, but then really practical, and then taking it to these case studies. Like, I can already think about people that I want to give it to. So I'm really excited that I got to have you here on your launch week. And I know that, I don't know how you feel about book number two. I feel like book one, number one is like, I did it. And book number two is like, I hope I'm good at this.
I still don't call myself an author. Like, it's just one of those things. But I am just grateful at the end of the day. I even dedicated this one to my 420 SAT score in English, because
which was brilliant, by the way. I loved that.
But it wouldn't, if I let that define me, there's no way I would have written one plus another. Mm-hmm. And I'm just grateful for every single opportunity to do something like this. If I never write another book, it is what it is. What you said at the very beginning is what I'm most excited about, though, is I feel like Life-Giving Leader was, if you were looking for a leadership book, maybe that would make sense to you. Mm-hmm. This one is one you walk by and you see on the shelf and you go, oh gosh,
that's,
I need
for
to
me.
Know about that. You know?
Yeah.
And honestly, if I'm being real honest, I've even thought about, what if we took some of the faith elements out of it? Not all of it, but like, some, it could be a straightforward business book that sits over there, and I can't take the faith out of my leadership. Like, that's just not possible.
Yeah.
But I could scale it back some. But honestly, I really feel like I wanted this for people that are doing this currently, but also as an onboarding tool. Like, if you're bringing people on your team, what a cool gift to send them 2-3 weeks out and say, if you want to know what success looks like in these next few weeks coming on, we believe this is a great way to start.
Absolutely. And to give and I'm a huge fan in coaching, like, when you're with a team and you can develop shared language, and you really give that shared language that says, hey, here's the priorities. I'm going to affirm these priorities. You know, you've got your pillars of healthy, you know, that whole idea, which you guys can go read about in the book. And that gives you that language to say, okay, how am I going to define what this looks like as I get going here? So it's fantastic. Love having it. Just one last thing I want to say. You mentioned that Cameo's song Word Up is the ultimate, and I'm just going to date both of us, because I'm like, I can sing it in my head right now. Like, I've got it.
So do you agree or disagree? What do you think?
I mean, I wanted to talk about it because I was like, yeah, what is it? Is it like the driving baseline? Like, what is it that we, that makes yes. it so right?
So when it comes to a skating song,
okay,
there's got to be a timing and a baseline that has a beat that allows you to advance bounce skate. That's the key. It's like, you remember the Lil Bow Wow Roll Bounce movie, right? You can't advance bounce skate in rhythm with other people if the beat's not right.
What is an advanced bounce skate?
That's when, you know, like, and it's, people can't see this because it's, but it's when you've got that bounce, when you, it's that little extra bounce when you move from the left to the right.
So you're going side to side and you get like a little bit of a pop.
You got that little extra kick in there.
Yes.
But you got to have the right beat.
You've
got to
get that driving rhythm, but then you've got the smooth melody on top of it.
Yeah.
There's really nothing. There's nothing that compares.
No, and there's nothing that can stop you actually when that happens. I mean, that's.
Do you have a Do you have a hype song right now? Do you have like a pump up song? Like if you need to get going.
Yo, one song, and this I'm not a big country fan, but I like enough of it. But Eric Church's "Stick That in Your Country" song. There's something about that just kind of get like he even gets fired up in it, so it makes me kind of get fired up.
My Eric Church is like my husband's favorite guy, country singer. He loves him, so that's pretty awesome. Yes, awesome. Well, thank you, Tyler, for letting us get to know you a little bit and having an awesome conversation. We'll drop all the info about where to find you, how to get connected to you, and how to, of course, grab a hold of this book because everyone, I mean, you're right. 90% of people leading are leading something that they didn't start. And this is a great place to begin.
Thanks, Nicole.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Let's Be Real podcast. If you have a question for the show, you can send it to me at Nicole@NicoleEunice.com. And hey, if you're enjoying this, we'd love for you to like, subscribe, share it with your friends, pass it on, shout it from the rooftops, whatever you feel like doing, because the reality is, let's get as many people getting real as possible. Talk to you soon.